Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hi guys, this is Alice. This episode is brought to you by She Is in Russia podcast, where they interview Kristaps on the past and present of Latvia and its people. Thank you for your patience and waiting for the Dmitry Potapenko episode. It's coming out next week. And now, let the ladies from She Is in Russia podcast take the stage.
I'm Kristaps Andrejsons, a journalist and a host of the Eastern Border podcast. And it's a show where I try to explain in English how it was like to live in the Soviet Union by collecting both historical sources and people's stories. And people's stories are sometimes very funny and sometimes they're quite depressing. But, you know, I'm a podcaster about the Soviet Union from Riga, Latvia.
Awesome.
So here you go, comrade.
Thank you, comrade.
Perfect. Yeah, so I think the goal of this episode is just to kind of, well, one, explain through specific events, like the history of Latvia, and just kind of give people a sense, because I think that a lot of people just like don't know much about Latvia. And then also to talk about like your personal experience of being Latvian and specifically how it relates to Russia and the Soviet Union. And then
Oh, it's cold and also sometimes dark, and then you wear warm stuff in winter.
Yeah, and then also, I don't know, like, this last section that's on this document, I don't know if this is, like, a real thing that, like, Latvians think and talk about, but when I was reading the Latvian Wikipedia and then looking at that video you made of that Russian, or of the Latvian, the Soviet car show, like, it just seems like there's, like, a lot of trees and greenery, and I think it's like 50% of the country is like covered in forest.
59% of Latvia is
forest.
Yeah,
so that's like kind of amazing. I feel like that is something important, so I wanted to talk about that also.
We had a wild boar issue here, like in the center of Riga at one point. Now they've kind of died out, but at one point they could like, there were so many of them that, you know, our government had to hire some hunters to shoot off more wild boars than usual, because really they just came down to the city center from the surrounding forests, even in the summer nights. So it was like we had warning signs saying that if you're taking the last bus to kind of, you know, those nice the suburbs, then you should better kind of be careful and watch out of things.
Wait, did people in the city hunt them? Like, you can eat boar, right?
Yeah, we do. My wife's dad is a hunter, so that's... No, right now they died off, because we had... After that, the overpopulation caused an influx of their, what, African boar plague, African swine plague. And so a lot of them, they just died out from that. It kind of struck our kind of pork industry as well a bit, especially in the countryside.
Whoa, really? Wow.
It was a sad and miserable story, but hey, you know, that's what I did.
Wait, when was this? Recently?
Yeah, it was like 2016.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Wait, so like you would regularly see just wild boar wandering around Riga?
Yeah, you know, because we have a kind of a racing track next to where I live, because I live in kind of outskirts of Riga. And I live right next to a hospital, and, you know, I saw, when I was driving home with my trolley bus, there was an ambulance car who had just smashed into a wild boar. And the wild boar was dead, but the car was pretty much, well, useless too, because unlike Disney would like to tell you, wild boars are really huge and dangerous animals.
Actually, yeah, do they attack people? Is that why there are, like, warnings?
Yes, they do. If you go too close, not usually, but you know, if you see a wild boar mom with her little kind of piglets running around, that you don't want to go close at all.
Okay, yeah.
Wow.
That sounds, I mean, it sounds bad, but I also, it sounds like a little fun or something. I like seeing.
You just wish
like
you
that.
Could see a wild boar, but you don't know what it's like to have an infestation.
Wow. Okay. So I picked the two, like, events kind of based on just, like, I wanted to get a sense of the beginning of the 20th century and the end of the 20th century. But if you want to talk about anything that happened between those two points, obviously feel
No,
free.
Comrades, your show. Just okay. Ask me whatever you want me to talk about. It's going to be great.
So, I guess first I just wanted you to kind of talk about what the National Awakening was.
Oh, wow. The first one, we have to go back then to the part when we were in Russian Empire and we were the province of Livonia. And it kind of goes back to the 19th century again. But, like, even the thoughts about our own country independence really, really gathered some fuel during the First World War, when the Latvian Riflemen battalions were formed, which were like, Latvian-led Latvian kind of fighting units who fought for the Russian Empire because here our situation was dualistic. We were under the Russian Empire, but this region always had a lot of autonomy, so we were ruled by essentially German nobles for a huge time. You know, central authorities are all Russian imperial ones, but all the local nobles are German. That was going on. But then,
pre-20th century.
That's early 20th century, right. Yeah. And then, you know, the nice little thing known as the October Revolution happened. Well, at first it was February Revolution, and then there was October Revolution, then some civil war happened, then civil war was just all sorts of craziness with like three different Latvias running about, because there was the one which was made by Peter Stuchka in Moscow, which was the Soviet one. Then there was our own kind of nationalistic one. Then there was the pro-German one created by the supporters of Berman-Tavalov. It was just crazy. But yeah, it was a huge mess, for which I would have to go into, like, large detail. But at the end of the day, it all just went down. And it all ended in 1922 when kind of we signed our peace treaty with the Soviet Union and border deals and everything and wrote our own constitution. But the first awakening really happened as World War I kind of ended up, because a lot of these people who went into politics in those years, they were all veterans of the Great War, and then veterans of the Soviets, of the Great Civil War, which got us involved too, and the Estonians and Lithuanians and Poles, and then Lithuanians and Poles were fighting each other. It was all completely crazy back in the early 20s. But yeah, it was a strange period where at that point we used kind of these late 19th century ideas of what a nation state is and what does it even mean to be a Latvian, because I feel like people back then, they wanted to find some purpose and some idea around which to concentrate, and it was a very kind of optimistic period, so to speak, at a point, because, you know, after your whole generation of people have been just off to war. And they've been fighting all over for various sides, and often like shooting each other, and often had shot each other a lot. Then it all kind of came down to basically just sticking to these very romanticized national ideas and trying to build something around that. So our first constitution kind of represented that. It was based on Weimar Republic one, and we, for example, didn't have any percentage barriers in our first constitution. So, you know, if...
But, sorry, what does that mean? What's a percentage barrier?
That's when you have to, like, if you're a party that wants to get into the parliament, in these days you have to get at least 5% of the vote in Latvia to get representation in parliament. Back then, there was no such percentage barrier, so, you know, we had, like, 28 parties in our parliament, each which like of which most had, like, one or two elected officials. So it was a huge, enthusiastic mess with a lot of people just, you know, drowning their issues in whatever substances they could get their hands off, and, you know, playing up this late 19th century romantic Latvian folklore and literature and everything, and, you know, building up their country based on that, because they felt like they needed to get something out, just, you know, some sort of outflux that, you know, all my friends died for something, so let's build this up as nice and cool and romantic as we can. That's
a position that I think at least spoken about.
But the first period was kind of interesting about with the fact that we, just like every other country around us, like we had Karls Ulmanis in Latvia and a lot of these kind of early democratic leaders in the 30s. In the 20s, everyone was very, very democratic and very chaotic, but later on, Karls Ulmanis, which is like our George Washington, at one point he decided that, you know, our parliament's a bit too much of a mess, and then he had a coup, and he was our kind of authoritarian leader for a while. Yeah, up until World War II.
And so during this, like, span of time, was it really, like, everybody in Latvia was involved in politics and in this, like, idea of the national awakening and, like, forming a nation and had a lot of patriotism? Or was it a specific class of people that were involved?
See, this is kind of the weirdest part, because at least our bigger cities, and a lot of my Latvian listeners probably will yell at me, but Riga has never been a kind of purely Latvian city, because up to 1939, for example, about 20-30% of people living in Riga were Germans. Then, of course, a lot of Russians, a ton of Jews, everyone. We've always been, like, at least Riga has always been a very multicultural city. So, I don't know, this patriotism, kind of, there were certainly a lot of people in the government playing up this Latvian-ness, but that mostly happened later on in the late 30s. In the 20s, everyone was just kind of amazed that we have this brand new country, and, you know, let's see what we can do with it. So I think it was more like this. Well, first of all, we had the agricultural reform, you know, so similar as in Russia, because when the old farms, large estates owned by the nobility, were kind of split up and spread around people. So it was kind of weird. I don't know, patriotism, sure, but it was a different patriotism than what you could see, for example, in like 1990s. A different kind of one, I'd mm-hmm. say. This was more or less a romanticized version. For example, we had this guy Ernest Brastinch, who in 1922 decided, you know, try to restore the old pagan religion. The problem is we don't know much about the old pagan religion, so he just smashed up things on paper, what he thought was right, without much historical basis. But the problem is, then, you know, a lot of people now think it was the actual real thing, while we don't know much about it. But then again, I don't know, and at that period in Latvia, we were all kind of weirdo anarchist types, because being a revolutionary was a proud tradition in these lands. Like, if you know about the Coral Castle in Florida, with Edvards Lietskalnič, Edvards Lietskalnič moved to the United States because he kind of, in the 1905 revolution, he shot a baron and blew up a distillery and carried around a rifle and was a revolutionary in general. So, you know, if you look into the past of all these guys in early 20s, then you can see all sorts of crazy people, because if you were something in Latvian politics, you obviously had participated in all the wars and also in 1905 revolution. So that's kind of weird.
It's just like kind of a hodgepodge of people. Well, cause,
yeah, because and there's like the timeline of the National Awakenings. There's like three distinct ones, right? Correct.
In Latvia. Yeah, one is in the 19th century. Then there's like in the 20s when we got our own country, and then there was in 1990s after when the Soviet Union collapsed. Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned that like that was like a different, the last one, the 1990s was a different kind of.
Yeah, that was
different. Can you explain why or like what particularly is different?
That was different because over here in Latvia. In the Soviet era, a lot of people just remember kind of mostly Stalinist era stuff and things like that. Because we have like we had our own, like, for example, song and dance festivals and national holidays and stuff like that. And a lot of kind of our national culture was kind of toned down and suppressed during the Soviet era. Because of, I don't know, because of some central policy of kind of, you know, this internationalism or whatever. For example, Latvians in here had to study a year longer in the schools than the Russians. Latvian schools had an extra year in curriculum because they also had to learn all this, all the Russian language stuff and everything. So kind of Russian youths had a kind of better chance of going to work market back then or something. So, And then nobody wanted to go to the army, and a lot of huge issues were there, of course, with the Afghanistan war, because people weren't happy. Just, you know, you live in Riga, and then you get conscripted, and then you have to go and fight in Afghanistan, and nobody wants to be there. And then, you know, people went there and died, and there was kind of this the disillusionment, so to speak, this idea that a lot of the things that we wanted to do or sing or kind of like speak about, they were kind of prohibited even.
We're Latvians, though. Okay, go ahead.
No, I just want to say that, for example, you know, at least in my family, my ancestors remember the first Latvian independence kind of quite fondly. And, So it was that Independence Day that we have here now, which we celebrate also now, is in the 18th of November. But the thing is, you couldn't celebrate that in Soviet era, obviously. But as they lived in a small town, my grandmother's younger brother had a names day on the 18th of November. His name was Alexander. So, you know, that names day turned into kind of the biggest celebration of that small town. and they always had to like put extra plates on the table and, you know, prepare extra salad and extra foods, because they knew that every year someone from the authorities would come over and ask, hey, what are you celebrating here? Are you celebrating this bourgeoisie things? And everyone would be like, no, check out his passport, it's cool, we're celebrating his name day, please, we have rosols here and shuba, like, come. So they would come down and eat and just leave and, you know, write in their paper, we check, they're just celebrating this, because the party people, the authorities who are like sent there, well, you know, they're the locals too, they have to do it because of formality so that they can write the papers. After, at least that happened after a while. During Stalinist era was different. During Stalinist era, you had to be even more careful. But yeah, that kind of happened. And again, some sort of romanticization happened in a way. But it was mostly about the fact that we were again losing kind of this national identity, so to speak, because one of the things that really started everything was when Gorbachev allowed to create these kind of ecological clubs, you know, the kind of green societies, because in here in Baltics, the Bay of Botnia, it was heavily polluted back then. I don't know its current situation. So when that happened, then people understood that, hey, well, we could do our own independence ideas and we could hide them in these little movements.
Mm.
So we started doing that. And yeah, all through this era, and that is an issue, which is a serious issue, which my government in Latvia has done a lot of terrible things themselves. See, the thing is, in Soviet era, a ton of Soviet citizens from Russia, from Ukraine, from Belarus, from everywhere. They were kind of, you know, moved here. The population was artificially inflated, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were just moved here en masse. So one of the biggest protest actions, which kind of characterizes all the field, was they wanted to create a metro in Riga. But people kind of went out and protested against it, because at that time in Latvia, it was truly like 50% Latvians and 50% everyone else. But the government openly stated that, yeah, we're going to build this metro, and then we're going to bring in more kind of workers from, you know, from Siberia, whatever, from other parts of the country. And at that point, Latvians understood that if we don't go out and don't become active, we will become a minority in our own country. Which we kind of, you know, we feel this connection with here, because that's where we've lived since the Germans first came here and you know, did this whole crusading thing on us, which was a fun story all on its own. So that also served as one of these big moments. So that's kind of weird, but yeah, that has that whole influx of people from other parts of the Soviet Union in Latvia. That still causes a lot of tensions up until today. Yeah.
Okay. I have a question based on what you just said about like sort of tensions that exist from that artificial population moving time during the Soviet era and then up until today in terms of like non-Latvian populations. I'm ethnically Latvian, I guess. I was wondering, or we were wondering specifically about attitudes towards ethnic Russians in particular, but actually maybe we could just speak more generally. Could you just describe like the current situation with that? Okay. Not just with Russians, but non-Latvians.
See, the problem, it's not just non-Latvians. In Latvia, a lot of these people use the term ruskoyazychny, basically Russian-speaking population. That's how we kind of orient them around, because that also involves a lot of Ukrainians, Belarusians, all these guys. See, and that's where my government, I think, made a mistake, because in the 90s, there was this... in the 90s, we had the referendum here about leaving the Soviet Union and about our independence. And if you think about it, that at that point, Latvians were only like 50% of the whole country, but 85% of people who voted for leaving the Soviet Union. So obviously, a lot of these Russian-speaking population wanted outside of the Soviet Union. But my government then decided to do it, basically, unlike in Lithuania, where they gave citizenship to everyone living there at the moment, my government decided to give citizenship only to those people who were citizens of, previous Latvia from the 1918 to 1940, and their kind of relatives, you know, to those
people. Oh, okay.
The Jura principle, which led to our weird situation that we have a lot of these non-citizens, aliens, as they've been put. So in the early 90s, that's what our government did. And then the rules of becoming a citizen were that you had to learn Latvian language, you had to learn Latvian history and stuff. But at the same time, they didn't really provide any kind of free means to do so at that era period. So now what we have here is that, you know, you can't really... There were a lot of kind of these Russian-speaking people who thought that, you know, this whole Soviet Union thing, yeah, it'll be back in two weeks. Why should I bother? Because you could just... And even now, if you just speak Russian, you can pretty much get around town here in Latvia, because a lot of people speak Russian.
And what's the current breakdown? Like, there's a fair percentage of the population, right, that's not citizens?
Not as much, actually. They've been falling down steadily. Because also, if you're this non-citizen, then you can still you can just go to Russia without a visa. You have your own huge amount of benefits. We have a lot of Russian citizens living in Latvia now as well, because there are companies now in Latvia, and I mentioned this Dmitry Potapenko, who, because in Russia you can get a pension 10 years earlier than in Latvia, so you can get a Russian citizenship and get your pension from Russia for all of your like Soviet era work. Like earlier, So a lot of there are people who do that, even though our pension's larger, that's 10 years earlier. So people just mix it up and do crazy jurisdictional loopholes. But the situation now is that, I don't know, at least in the younger generation, everyone who's like under 30, well, we're all pretty friendly and stuff. But there are especially older populations, and I'm talking about both ethnic Latvians and kind of these Russian-speaking people. They live in some sort of their own press bubbles, so to speak. The conflict basically is often artificially created before the elections, so that, you know, we have our nationalistic party, and then we have our, like, I don't know how to even put that. We have this Harmony Center, which positions themselves as pro-minority party. But yeah, then an investigative journalist found out that they actually have a nice deal between themselves. Because, you know, one of them would do something, you know, like our new thing about Russian schools stuff. And then they do their own actions, because due to the strange history of the Baltic region, we have Memorial Day for the Latvian Legion, folks, on 16th of March, which has lately gone without any provocations, but it always causes a furor. And then there, in the 9th of May, the other miss happens in our Victory Monument, because, you know, it's turned into a major festival and a lot of people get drunk there. So there are some tensions there, but they're becoming lower and lower each month, basically. Because, you know, we're getting along quite well. And sometimes, you know, due to my podcast, I have some visitors and stuff, and I have relatives living in Russia, and it feels kind of weird to explain to those people who come here from Russia, whom I take around town, is you're not all fascists, you're not gonna punch us for speaking Russian, and I'm like, no, we're not, we're totally okay, it's fine.
So was an era at one point where people like saw speaking Russian as some sort of political statement.
Yeah, and, you know, there are a lot of people who do that now, but it's, again, there are people who live in their own press kind of media bubbles. You know, if you read only the ultra-nationalist Latvian press that makes it look like, you know, all Russians want to do is restore Soviet Union and exile all to Siberia, and then there's kind of press from the other side, which is like, oh, you know, these, like, every NATO forces are all evil, and, you know, all Latvians are fascist scum. Yeah, that too. And there are people who live in these media bubbles, but like I said, as time moves on, we've all just learned that, you know, you have to look to the future, be friendly to each other, and live together, and, you know, form some common identity here. You know, be friendly. Get on with the times. Let's look at the history and how it was, accept it, and, you know, move on with your lives, build a better country for everyone who lives here. That's the general thought here, and I'm really, really happy that it's going that way. Because any real tensions are very, very exaggerated by this point. The craziest moment was when, maybe you've heard of this guy, Ayo Benes. Maybe you've heard of him. He's now fighting in Donetsk. That guy was the leader of National Bolsheviks here in Latvia, and in 1995, he and his pals took over one of the biggest churches in Old Riga with a hand grenade and threatened to blow up everyone there, together with the monuments, if we wouldn't give instant citizenship to basically everyone, and, you know, wouldn't free some people from prison. That didn't go very well. Obviously, this action caused a lot of ultra-nationalistic counteractions again, so that was the craziest moment, but that was in 1995. Right now, it's 2018. I have Russian friends, they all speak Latvian, I speak Russian. We all have learned to, you know, peacefully exist together, because I think it's all about, a lot of people think that you have to be angry at someone all the time, and that people don't like to blame themselves for the situation that they're in, and they don't like to start working and improving situations. They always like to point at someone else and blame those guys for whatever is bad at whatever place. So we're trying to avoid that here. It's not as bad as it might seem sometimes if you look at the media from either ultranationalists or from, I don't know, like Rubaltik.ru or other weird sites, which I wouldn't recommend, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of always the case, right? Like, the extremes get more attention than the actual experience as the middle population.
But that was the silliest part because, you know, they're both in our parliament, like both kind of these sort of pro-Putin party, because they had this deal with United Russia and they get money from them, and these other guys, these ultra-nationalists. But the funniest thing was that, like, 3 or 4 years ago, our investigative journalists found out that they just went to Minsk and to play hockey together with Lukashenko and signed some deals there, even though they publicly hate each other very much. Just radicals playing off other radicals, creating a fuss to get more votes in the elections. That's about it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for this. It got serious really quickly, but...
Okay, don't be sorry. Happens. I just wanted to go back just a little bit to something that you mentioned. You're like, that thing with Russian schools, and I didn't know what you were talking about.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was in the news, because in Latvia, for many, many years, we had two systems of education, because after the Soviet Union collapsed, we had state-funded schools in Russian and state-funded schools in Latvian. And we are, over time, actively moving so that our state-funded schools would only be in Latvian. You know, because that's our official language here. And, it caused a lot of protests in 2006, but it right now it's like this. You get to study up until 6th grade in your own kind of language, whichever you choose. Then it's kind of mixed, and then it's all in Latvian if you study this Russian thing. But now they're shifting it all in a way to Latvian, and it caused massive riots in 2006 when they shifted this around. So now in the second wave of reforms, which they're doing now, there were protesters, but all those protesters were basically old people who haven't learned Latvian yet or something. Because I don't know, again, it's kind of this thing that you can have a private school that teaches other languages, just that our government decided that we need to ensure that everyone speaks Latvian after they finish high school, so that we could get rid of this whole alien situation, you know, all this non-citizenship situation. Because, you know, it's Latvia. Everyone who is a citizen should speak Latvian here. That's the national policy.
That's now the policy, is that everything in school is taught in Latvian in all public schools?
Yes, it's only for public schools. We have had private school. You can open up a private school and teach it in whatever language you want. We're not touching those, which is one of the things that people often state. But yeah, we're not eliminating any private schools or whatever.
And then you also can choose to take a foreign language, like, do people, like, English or something?
Yeah, we have mandated foreign languages in schools. I studied Russian and English at school when I was a kid.
Okay. Cool.
But so you spoke Latvian growing up with your family?
Yeah.
At home?
At home, I spoke Latvian. Well, and sometimes Russian, too, because my grandma was Russian. One of them was Russian.
Mm.
She was Russian speaking, to be exact. She was an Orthodox lady, very rough and hard. She had lived through the war, and she had to, basically, her mom died during the war, and so she had to start working already at the age of 13 to kind of make sure the rest of her family could survive and stuff. So that was
where
a
was
bit
she
of a
from?
She was in Lot.
She was in Latvia
during World War II? Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, we've always had a Russian minority here, but before the Soviet era, the Russian minority were all the old believers. That's why I made an episode about them, because we have like one of the biggest congregations on the planet Earth of old believers, one of the richest too, because they were at that point when all this kind of Orthodox reform happened. As this region was more autonomous than the rest of the Russian Empire, so they moved here. So we have quite a lot of old believers here in Latvia.
Could you do a really brief... I mean, I don't think a lot of people know what old believers are and what that split is. Would you do just a really brief, like, explanation of what that is?
Oh, I made an episode about that at one point, but let's see what I remember.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't exactly remember under which czar it was. But the idea was that a lot of parishes were following kind of the religious texts of Moscow Patriarchate, but others were following the Constantinople Patriarchate.
rules and rights, so they kind of unified the rights and made some reforms about how you should do the sign of the cross and what language to be used in church services, and basically formal rules. But there were the old believers are those who refused these reforms and just wanted to do things the old way. So they kind of moved away, because at that point it was, you know, it was early imperialist Russia. It's like you didn't get a lot of tolerance back in those days.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
The next question I want to ask is like maybe a little more technical. It's the one about Latvian taking on like specific phrases or words from Russian. Is that something that happened over like the last 100 years?
Yeah, you know, we've been in Russian Empire for so long. We have a lot of Russian words. We have a lot of German words as well. But obviously, see, this is kind of weird because I speak both Russian and Latvian and English. But we use Russian words are mostly used kind of slang like. But see, so many people here speak Russian that when you want to say something, then you just sometimes can use Russian as well. Well, that's a really weird question, and I don't really know how to answer that linguistic things. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Do you have an example of like Russian slang that you use often?
Oh man. I do, because we basically
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
And I'm a gamer. We use fantasy terms in like a lot of games are here are in Russian. So we use those things, and you know a lot of verbs, for example, are used there. And then obviously everyone who's swearing, we're using Russian swear words mostly, because Latvian swear words sound kind of silly.
Wait, comparison, can you say a Latvian swear word if you don't mind? Or if you don't want to, it's okay.
Latvian swear words are like multis or dritvaja kociņa or something like that. It's nothing like, you know, the beautiful thick thing when you. I don't want to swear in Russian on the show. Oh. It's kind of weird. But yeah, you
it's
know,
okay. We swear on here. You can swear if you want.
Like, you know, everyone.
Our audience is all adults.
See, when you really hit. When you get up from your chair and you hit your little finger on your toes, and then you just say "blah," because that's the thing that you scream aloud. That's short and concise. So we mostly swear in Russian for some reason.
I love that. Oh my god, that's
a Soviet thing, and also all this, like for example, the term "tufta," or we also say "shuba" for the salad. Everybody knows what that is. Kind of small everyday things.
So everyone eats that salad?
Yeah,
that particular one?
We totally eat that salad. We eat olivier. We eat like all sorts of foods. Our in Russian foods are very common. For example, like I had pelmeni for dinner today. So
yeah, nice.
Okay, so I just don't know what Latvian sounds like, so would you mind, like, reintroducing yourself, but in Latvian, just so the listeners can hear what it sounds like?
Oh, wow. Mani sauc Kristaps Andrejsons, es vadu podcastu Eastern Border, kurā es stāstu cilvēkiem par padomju savienības vēsturi un to, kā tur bija dzīvot, izmantojot gan cilvēku stāstus, gan vēstures avotus.
I like how you did it in, like, an announcer voice.
Prepetem dujam, what is that? Or did I not say it right? Is that something with teaching, or am I just... Did you say I teach at
no,
any point?
No, no, I didn't say I teach at any point.
Wait, Lily, are false. You able to understand that at all? Or
no, really? No, no, no. I mean, I just thought I heard a word that was like teach, but I didn't.
That was similar. That was paskaidroj. That was explain.
Oh. Wait, say the word again.
Paskaidroj. Okay. See, the thing is, imagine Latvian and Russian grammars are very similar because we also have the very two genders for nouns, all the declinations are practically the same and everything, but our words are, like, us and Lithuanians, we have this Baltic branch, so our words are different and we do not use Cyrillic, but the grammar and the structure of the language are very similar to Russian. So, that's the thing, because... yeah, we use commas the same way. We put the words and sentences in about the same order. A lot of similarities. So
if you're in Riga, for example, would more people at this point speak English or Russian? Like if you were being a tourist.
Latvian? Oh,
no. Like in a store or something.
Definitely, Russian. Definitely Russian. Okay. But again, it's kind of changing because, for example, a lot of younger people who were born in late 90s who are just hitting 18 and are Latvian, a lot of them just completely don't speak Russian anymore. That's
right,
another
right.
thing. But I feel that's a shame because, frankly speaking, I don't know. One of my favorite books, for example, are 12 Chairs or like Golden Calf or also like Bulgakov's Master and Margarita. And I read all of them in Russian and I simply cannot imagine how could you possibly read in any other language. Because, again, it's all in Russian and as in Latvian, there are a lot of these weird word plays and dual meanings of things. And then there are people who again go out of their way and try to reproduce that in English. So, you know, you can't have Vojna I Mir in English. It's war and peace, of course, but, you know, it can also be shifted around a bit. It's weird. you know the theory that's actually the war in the world, even though it's world and war, it's war and peace, obviously, because that was the intention, because back then the spelling was different, but still, weird things happening.
Oh, I see. Smith, that's just... You don't understand this, but the word for...
Because you're an idiot.
No. The word in Russian for peace can also mean world. Mir. Okay. Anyway.
Okay. So
you can go ahead. Yeah, I don't have any language ones.
Yeah. So, okay. So a while ago, you kind of referenced Russian companies and Russians, like, more recently moving to Latvia, and specifically the example that I have on this document is Medusa. And I'm wondering is that a trend that you're seeing with other companies coming to Riga? And, like, if so, what do you think the reason is for that, besides, like, the pinch and stuff?
Because we speak in... Because a lot of us here speak Russian, that's one. And two is that... And it's kind of weird. We're just close. We're culturally quite similar. So I guess that's why they move here. But not all of them do. And it gets really, really complex often. Because, I don't know, we have this rule that if you invest certain amount of real estate here, then... then you can get a permanent residency, which allows you to travel through Schengen zone without a visa.
Wow.
So a lot of rich people from Russia also just come here because they kind of basically buy their way into Schengen zone. And we have, and this will sound very weird, but due to our recent investigations, a lot of so-called corrupt businessmen in Russia, yeah, they like to use Latvian banks as intermediaries to basically get their monies outside to the offshores. Our bank business kind of really profits on it in a large way. That's one thing. Also, you know, we have cities like Jurmala, which used to be a popular resort in the Soviet era, because that's one of the weird things. When I do kind of these shows about the Soviet era, then turns out that we in the Baltics had it pretty good in comparison. And that kind of... that is sometimes really interesting to think about, because we didn't think we had it that well. But apparently we did. So a lot of people, for example, remember this Jūrmala as something kind of really great, some place where they can relax, so they're just used to this.
Mm. Is there anything like to be said about Latvia serving as like a country of asylum or anything like that, or not really?
We do have some people from Russian opposition living here, but not as many as you would think, because again, Latvia is not all that kind of, I don't know, maybe Latvia is not Germany or France, for example. We don't have, like, if you don't have a job, we don't have as generous welfare or something. So, for example, Mr. Maltsev moved to France after he kind of managed to slightly fail his revolution.
Hmm. I didn't realize he moved to France. I missed that. Okay. But is like the tax or interest rate or something, like, are taxes lower or something, or what's the deal with, why are people?
Because I think it's really just because for the cultural reasons, because you can, you know, it's close to Russia, you can speak Russian here and get around with it. You don't really need, if you're not intending to become a citizen, then you can easily just get around with just Russian. It's not a problem at all. So.
Yeah, and the Schengen thing is really cool, because, like, in case anyone doesn't know, if you're a Russian citizen, you can't just go to Europe. You have to have a visa. You can't really go anywhere, except for...
Yeah, but if you buy this, if you invest enough in real estate or companies or whatever, you can get a permanent residency, and then you can go to Schengen's on countries easily.
That's very cool, yeah. I mean, that makes sense, that attracts people who have money. Speaking, I guess this is kind of bringing us to nature, speaking of like the resort town, but maybe more broadly, could you tell us about like what's the geography of Latvia, and like what kind of places do people go when they're going to see, to be in nature?
Well, we have forests, and then we have some sea, and then we have swamps too, but it's 59% forest. And right. You know, we have the river Daugava, which is I think it's Zapadnaya Dvina in Russian. It starts in Belarusia, and it's like 200 meters away from that river that flows into the Black Sea. There they both meet in the same Altai Mountains. So a lot of people like to do very long boating trips as well.
Mm.
But the nature, well. How to explain this? It's like St. Petersburg, but a bit warmer.
The whole country?
I don't know, I guess. So our country is very, very small. Our country isn't the size of West Virginia. Okay?
For American listeners. Okay, that's good. But Petersburg is flat and a former swamp. But are there mountains? No.
Maybe? Like I said, we have just some hills. It's very hilly and stuff, but swampy near the sea. But yeah, but like our capital Riga is located next to the sea as well, so it really is like St. Petersburg, just a bit more warm because it doesn't because everything doesn't freeze up in winter. But yeah, mostly it is forests, and then there are lakes near the Russian border where I used to live in when I worked in there in Lodz. But the weirdest part is all this kind of regional culture, because even in our whole nation of about 2 million, we have our own regional dialect thing, which is these Latgali, these Litigalians and whatever. They have their own dialect of our language, and they live in this region. They are the hardcore Catholic folks, a lot of Orthodox people there as well.
And what's the like terrain there like? Is it more rural?
It's more rural, yeah. It's lakes and basically farmlands. Basically, that's about it.
Okay, so you described earlier the wild boars in the city, but I kind of like, In America, the West Coast kind of has this stereotype about people like always going hiking and like being really outdoor oriented and like kind of building identities around that. And I'm kind of curious how Latvians interact with nature. Like, are you guys hiking a lot? Like, is a lot of time spent outdoors? What is the relationship there?
People like boating a lot. That's my favorite hobby too. But I don't know. A lot of people do hike, but hey, I'm stuck in Riga here now, so I don't have that much time to walk outside and do outdoorsy stuff. But yeah, a lot of people do hike, but most people just I don't know, go outside and when it's 24th of June, when there's our like National Jāņi Day. That's our national kind of festivity. It's like I like to explain in my show. It's a midsummer festival from the pagan days, which is dedicated to drinking beer and eating cheese.
And then a good holiday.
Yeah, that's also sex. A lot of sex. It's a fertility festival too. And it's a pagan festival which has just survived all through the Soviet era because you know we have these national folk songs from since when, from the 12th century. That was one of the weirdest things that Soviet era did, you know, in Khrushchev's time when, you know, all the repressions kind of died down a bit. At that point, they previously in Stalinist era, this national celebration, which had survived all throughout history, it was completely prohibited. Khrushchev decided that, you can, you know, it's kind of bad to do all sorts of very prohibitive stuff, so he started allowing these things. There were Soviet people who had to invent new folk songs, except this time it's about proletariat, like brave people from kolkhoz and stuff like that, which sound really silly when you try to turn classical folk songs into something about people living in kolkhoz, which is kind of silly, and they turn things around a bit, but that was fun. But we do that, and then we go outside. Also, one thing that Soviets introduced to this whole celebration is shashliks. Turns out, I was surprised about this in the 30s. In the 30s, people in Latvia didn't eat it as much, but now it's kind of a staple of our diets, especially in celebration.
Shashlik, yeah.
What is that?
What do we call it? Skewers of meat, you know, and you like
shish kebab.
Shish kebab, yeah.
Wait, which one of you is from Petersburg, and which one of you is from?
I'm from Peter. Well, I'm not from, but I live in St. Petersburg. Okay. I'm Olivia.
I'm Smith. I'm in Paris.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, shashlik is like, it's like what we also.
It's the Soviet barbecue. Kebab. What don't you get?
yeah, but I'm just trying to explain it for Americans. It's like, Smith, remember what we ate in Turkey? Just like skewers of meat?
Yeah, I know what a kebab is.
Oh, it's called a kebab. Okay, yeah, because I was confused if kebab was the right. Yeah. You said shish kebab. Is that just kebab?
Oh, they can find my podcast on theeasternborder.lv or, you know, iTunes or whatever you get good podcasts from, such as this one, which is an excellent podcast.
Thank you.
Then also I'm on Twitter. I'm on @eastern_border. If you follow She's in Russia on Twitter, then you know if you can find me through them. I know you can because I checked.
Yeah, we do follow you, and we'll obviously include all your information in the episode description and everything.
Thank you. And if you have any other questions, then please let me know. I'll be glad to help you out with anything. And yeah, I highly recommend your show to every one of my listeners as well.
Oh, thank you.
That's really nice. Wait, I have just a logistical question. When do you think, did you say when you think that the Potapenko, I don't know how to say his name.
Potapenko interview? Potapenko.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're working on
it. Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm
it's
just
really, really difficult. We're working on it.
Was it good? Was it fun? Was it interesting?
It was fun, but the problem is that he actually spoke. If you listen to the Russian opposition YouTube, such as, you know, all these Kamikaze D, and if you listen to some Dmitry Potapenko shows, it's not like he said many new things which you hadn't heard him say before.
Okay.
That's the issue here. He did say some interesting things about how he views Russia, and he compared it to a country where time just goes on in a slower pace. But then again, he said that Russian businessmen who actually manage to do business in other countries, they're way more rougher and can adapt to various crazy situations easier than you know, the locals. Because he's very proud how he's kind of conquered his niche in Czechia and in Bulgaria.
Wait, so what was your original motive for him particularly? Speaking to him?
Because I did some interviews, and I did an overlook on Russian opposition and Russian kind of more liberal media, starting with Medusa, whom I visited. And then I went and looked at what, for example, Alexander Sotnik is doing and some other kind of Russian sort of opposition journalists. And then a lot of them mentioned Mr. Potapenko. Because one of my questions that I asked was, well, Potapenko always criticizes everything. You know, he criticizes the fact that he has to pay, like, that he has, like, checks all the time in his businesses and whatever and everything. But yeah, why is he allowed to say these things so openly when, like, for example, if you know this Kamikadze Dead guy, who's like one of the biggest YouTubers there, you know, he also has moved away from Russia, and Medusa, they're now in Riga. So why did Medusa have to move if Potapenko can criticize these things? And then it was turned into this economical opposition thing. But Potapenko actually turns out he has very libertarian views.
Yeah.
Because I noticed that since he quoted Ayn Rand once and stuff, but it was very, very kind of an interesting discussion here.
Because, like, yeah, I did not know that he was considered, like, in the opposition. I mean, obviously he said some things, but I didn't realize that he was, like, a figure that people talked
about.
Pavel
Grudinin is his pal, you know. They're friends, personal friends with him, supporting him in a way with his presidential candidacy. Then again, Pavel Grudinin is a very interesting person because I am sorry, maybe I don't understand something, but if you have Sovkhoz imeni Lenina Zao, which is like a Sovkhoz in the name of Lenin, and that's the name of your limited liability company. That is a bit funny. Like he's a candidate from he runs this huge private company which grows strawberries, which is named Sovkhoz in the name of Lenin. That's the whole name of the company. Oh. And he's a candidate from the Communist Party of Russia.
It's amazing.
That's the thing, and if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. But yeah, you try to explain this to someone who doesn't know things. That's one of the things that I also do, because we here in Latvia, for example, we have a party which is called the Union of Farmers and Greens, like Greens and Farmers Union. Mm-hmm. But if you look at every other European Parliament, then the farming interests are always in the opposition with kind of the Greens, the Green interests. Mm. They never work together, except here in Latvia, because they are all actually tied up to influential people from the city of Ventspils, through which most of the traffic from kind of Russia and Belarus and all those places comes through. It's complex and it's weird, but hey, it's like, you know, like it is hard to explain this to non-comrades, you see. You have to know what's what. Yeah. But that's why I kind of wanted to speak with him, also because he's a huge Russian businessman, and it was very kind of nice to speak with someone who's, you know, achieved something in business, so he obviously knows a thing or two about how it's like to run a business in Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear his answers, because what I saw of him when I was like making these questions, he's like a successful businessman, but what you said about him not saying anything new was kind of what struck me, because he just kind of says these kind of like typical, I don't know, standard kind of like his position isn't particularly unique, but it's just sort of the fact that he's saying it in the context that he's saying it, like maybe like that economic forum where he first said his stuff, that make it eyebrow raising or something. but the actual content isn't particularly radical, I guess.
Yeah, but it's like he just criticizes the economy and stuff, and sometimes he for example, criticized the upgrades in Metro in Moscow because he thought that was a waste of money, for one.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to it. Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you for listening to The Eastern Border. If you have any comments or specific details you'd like to know, you're welcome to leave it in the comment section on our site, theeasternborder.lv, and we'll rummage even to the western border to find you an answer. Like this podcast? Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or on our RSS feed. Happiness is mandatory. Good reviews and donations feed the farmers of our kolkhoz in the great motherland. The Eastern Border salutes you. This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org for more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.